Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. Books.
Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and today I'm very proud of myself. I'm proud of my guest. I've had a guest on whose work I never knew before. It was recently introduced to me, although she's written around 9 various books. This newest book by Roberta Allen is called The Princess of Herself. Great title, huh? And it's from Pelicanesis, which is a press that is located in Claremont, California. And The Princess of Herself is a book of short stories. I find them interconnected, are they?
Yes.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yep.
I found them to be, what's more, interconnected, Roberta, about a small, relatively speaking, a small group of people who live in an area in upstate New York.
Yes.
They've moved away from New York City to be in a less hectic place. But then they get to the less hectic place and they discover they only have one another. It's not the nonstop hilarity and activity that they had in the big city.
Mm-hmm.
And so as they get to know one another, and worse, as they have to date one another and only one another, and so as they try to make connections with others, they discover, like most adults do, most of them are over 65,
yes,
that as you get older, you don't feel like experimenting with the possibility of strangers.
Mm.
It gets harder and harder.
That's interesting.
So the book is a book of stories of people who would like very much to be close to one another, who in different ways fail to be, but they don't stop trying. Yes. Now, you didn't live in such a circumstance, did you?
Part-time.
Ah.
And that made it easier to have some distance from them.
I see. And one of the subjects of this book is the writing of stories about people you know.
Mm-hmm.
The narrator is frequently aware that her ex-boyfriend or a girlfriend will recognize themselves in the stories and be offended.
Horrified.
But this doesn't stop her. Why not?
I think it's important to write stories of people who are not normally written about. Not in the way that I'm writing about them, anyway.
And what way is that?
I'm exploring them. I really see every story as a questioning, and I like to inform the reader of that, that this is really an exploration of who these people are and how I'm relating to them. I'm also a character in this book.
Not only a character, but a character who's no better than any of the others.
Yes.
and a character, you see, this is the important part, whose language use differs from the others because she writes short stories, and short stories require somehow that by the end of the short story, however brief, the language be knit together with a certain kind of finality. So what you'll hear is beautiful sentences that arrive at a perfect balance. So, you know, having a final sentence that hits the mark perfectly, well, we're going to hear one. We're going to hear one right now, because since we're talking about a person with really an original style, I think we should be able to hear what that style is like.
Okay. Every man's nightmare. After listening to her obsess for an hour on my speakerphone, my ex-boyfriend called her Every Man's Nightmare. I don't remember exactly what she said, only her hysterical voice as she spoke about the man she'd gone out with the evening before, a man she liked who, in the moment of trying to kiss her goodnight, unleashed every demon she normally drowned in red wine. But, evidently, she hadn't had enough red wine to drink, or maybe there wasn't enough red wine in all the liquor stores combined in the county to drown the fear his attempted kiss let loose, which made her tell him, probably with the same breathless rush of words I was hearing on the phone, that another woman they both knew was much better suited to him than she would ever be, and that she'd be happy to give him her number, since she was incapable of having an intimate relationship, or, for that matter, a casual relationship with him or anyone else. So sure was she that she'd wind up ruining everything, which is exactly what she did, without even having what could have been for someone else the sweetness of a kiss.
This is Roberta Allen reading the story Every Man's Nightmare. The phrase I'm talking about that the story leads to, and you'd never expect it, is the phrase the sweetness of a kiss, because what we've been listening to is a woman, pardon the word, shrying about her date the night before, mm-hmm. while her girlfriend is listening, and the girlfriend's boyfriend is listening too. The girlfriend's boyfriend,
The ex-boyfriend
calls. Yes, everyone is an ex-boyfriend here. And if not now, eventually.
Eventually, yes.
Yeah, Dutch, who we'd gotten used to as a boyfriend, becomes by the end an ex-boyfriend.
Yes.
They move them along. Keep it running. But suddenly, that phrase, the sweetness of a kiss, reminding us that no matter how terrible our recriminations against others may be, there's still the idealistic hope of the sweetness of a kiss. Mm. And that is, in a sense, what makes these stories, with all their fears and really hatreds of invasion, ultimately so moving. There's another woman in the very second story who's known as the ego shrinker, and they take good care to distinguish between an ego shrinker and a ball buster. But in fact, by the end of the two-page story, we learn that despite the failure of the romance, the engineer involved is still drawing up the plans for her new house. Yeah. In other words, they can't separate. There's always a yearning. Now, where did your optimism come from?
That's a good question. My optimism. Well, I think it's hidden inside somewhere. But I had a very extreme childhood, and I think that also led me to write about these people. And I think I also see in them my family and myself.
Well, Marie Sendak was once asked where the wild things came from. And he said, they were my family. These were my aunts and uncles and cousins. They'd come over and eat our food on the weekend. They'd insist on watching their program on the television. I used to hate having them over. These are the wild things. And this is this group of people are like those. They're very familiar,
yes,
but they're monstrous.
Not as monstrous as my family was.
Really?
Yeah. Much more extreme than these people, but still.
Well, maybe that's your optimism, to write about characters who, no matter what, are still less extreme than your family.
Well, I think it's also a way of trying to figure out who they were, who my family was.
Uh-huh. Now, you began as a conceptual artist, am I right?
Yes.
And what is the connection between that work? Because you've been writing stories,
yes,
for a long time,
yes,
and a novel and a travel book, and then two very exciting books of direction about how to write playfully in order to write fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the connection between your art and the writing? They seem equally important.
Well, the connection really is that I became tired of writing about redefinition of signs. And I really wanted to write something more personal, because I had to write statements about all my conceptual art. And I think in a way that I learned to write through that, because it wasn't that my art was so difficult, but it was difficult to write about. And these statements really kind of led me to want to write something more personal.
Oh, that's very interesting, because I think that's happening, too, in a lot of the art turned to fiction that I know, that the abstraction that people have been taught through being indoctrinated in certain kinds of theory gives way finally to a need, an appetite, to tell a different kind of truth.
Yes.
Not that one truth is preferable to the other. One truth won't do in the place of the other. But I want to tell human truth about the people I know and how they came to be dissatisfied in these ways. Now, dissatisfaction, though, seems to be at the root of these stories. Would you say it runs through all of the books?
Yes, there's a kind of distance. And there's this lack of connection between them all, and I think that's in all my books.
Yes, well, what was fascinating to me, I happened, this was an accident, to be talking to the writer and, for that matter, cultural critic, Chris Krauss.
Mm-hmm.
And she said something very interesting. She knows Roberta Allen's work. She wrote a blurb on this book. Mm-hmm. She said to me, Michael, don't you think this is Chekhov? This is the Cherry Orchard.
Hmm.
Just like they're all missing Moscow in the Cherry Orchard, they're all missing New York from the perspective of upstate New York. It's a very interesting thing to see these stories, yes, as New York Chekhovian.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, huh. I thought so, too, and I thought she was accurate.
Yes.
She's very good with that kind
mm-hmm.
of thing.
Yes.
How do you feel about Chekhov?
Oh, I've always loved Chekhov, the stories.
Yeah. But here, we get a couple of stories that are longer than the others. One in particular called Easter Sunday.
Right.
That has such a plangency of yearning about it that I felt, oh, how wonderful that these stories of structural dissatisfaction should fall away to reveal at least one story where you know where the heart is or where the heart wants to be.
Mm.
I am taking this opportunity, this wonderful opportunity, to talk to the writer Roberta Allen, and to suggest to my audience that you really go out of your way to get the book of stories, The Princess of Herself. Lucia Berlin wrote a book called A Manual for Cleaning Ladies.
Mm.
It wasn't until she was dead that people discovered the book. She was living her life and The Diarist of Poverty, but she was always writing and publishing with Black Sparrow. Roberta Allen, but here you are. You've published 7 books. What, 3 books of short stories?
Right.
How many novels?
1 novel and 1 novella and stories.
A novella and interrelated stories. What is your relationship to reader response?
Well, to reader response?
Is it something you need?
Yes, but not as much as I need the stories themselves. I mean, every one of these stories was something for me that needed to be written. And even though I never knew where that story was going, that would be the real energy for me. That would be the real drive to figure that out.
Am I hearing correctly the implication that you encounter stories that don't need to be written and that yours are written in contradistinction to those?
Yes.
That there's a kind of fiction that's just frivolous or emotionally untethered.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about it.
Writers like that?
Yes, you don't have to name them, but what kind of thing are they doing that irks you?
Well, they bore me. And I don't feel surprised. That's a major element. And 'cause I want to be surprised when I'm reading a story and or a novel. And so work that doesn't surprise me is not interesting to me.
I also get the feeling from what you've said that what doesn't surprise you is writers who remain insufficiently human and who stay at too great a distance from their material, writing that doesn't implicate itself
yes.
in the general fate of the world.
Yes, there's very small writing.
But this is small writing, too.
Yes, but I think it has implications that are beyond these characters, and I certainly think there are many characters like these people.
Because these stories are, in many ways, while they're very calm, they can be very vicious as well.
Yes. That's true.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm always afraid that I'm not getting it right. And these stories are so abrasive in their desire to clean the works, you know, not to let people get away with their fake, empathetic platitudes. It's a very enjoyable thing to read a story that doesn't want to waste any time with the fake, with the with consolation.
Well, I think I'm always trying to get at the essence of a story, so there's lots of stuff that just doesn't belong, but I don't know that until I'm writing it.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Roberta Allen about her book, The Princess of Herself. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Roberta Allen about her latest book, The Princess of Herself. You know, every once in a while, I encounter a book by a writer I've never heard of before, and I'm so surprised that I've never heard of her because the originality and freshness of the stories is quite apparent to me, and that's the case with The Princess of Herself. Now, you mentioned to me that you rewrote all of the stories for inclusion in this book. Did they significantly change, or how did they change?
I had the whole book assembled, and I thought because all of these stories had been published in literary magazines or anthologies, that it would be fine the way it was. But in truth, some stories I revised very late, like Easter Sunday. But some of them were written a few years earlier, and those seemed to me that they needed somehow to be stronger. And so I just went about each story, and well, I think there's no other way to say it, that I really wanted to make them stronger, that they didn't seem strong enough to me, and there weren't enough connections between the characters, though I've often found that when you write about people, they don't recognize themselves in stories anyway. And I haven't had any kind of reaction from any of those people, but maybe they just want to keep their distance because they don't want me to write about them again.
You taught writing at the New School.
Yes.
And many, many, many other places, ending in a workshop that has been more or less continuous, that meets in people's houses, and you're thought to be, pardon me for the praise, one of the best writing teachers, at least in New York City. What is teaching writing about?
I always think it's about finding truth, actually, and whether that truth is fictional or not. That seems to me what is you're striving for, and which is why I developed this method, these five-minute stories that are very focused. And there are quite a few stories that were written in one five-minute exercise. And so I found that that worked.
Now, these two books, The Playful Way to Serious Writing, and better still, The Playful Way to Knowing Yourself,
mm-hmm.
Do they have to do with the way you teach writing?
They do, but you know, in retrospect, I think they have more to do with my conceptual art.
Uh-huh.
'Cause in my conceptual art, I'm always playing with possibilities, and that's really what these two books are about.
So these were not written as a result of conclusions drawn from your writing workshops. They were the results of your art.
I think so, because all my art contained image and word. And I didn't even realize this till recently, how much they resembled not my conceptual art per se, but just a way of seeing the world or thinking.
So are you thinking with your stories?
Not so much.
So when the story ends, the story has ended.
Mm-hmm.
The story isn't a way of getting elsewhere. The story is a way of being here.
Of getting inside. That's really what I'm always looking to do, getting inside that story and to see where it goes from there.
Now, just now, you said that there was, if I heard correctly, a distinction to be made between finding truth and finding truth that works as fiction.
I think every truth can work as fiction. I mean, I consider all writing fiction. I mean, as soon as you're involved with memory, you're involved with fiction.
Does the memory need to be accurate memory?
It can't be.
It can't be. Wow.
Whenever you're writing a story, I think it depends how long ago something happened, and I like to write in retrospect. So it's very difficult to be accurate, and I know there are things I've forgotten, so that there are often details that come in that I never expected. And memory is very interesting to me.
Now, I believe that Proust, for instance, is yearning for accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
Are you not, or is it just pleasant when it comes along?
No, I am. I am aiming for accuracy. And even if every detail didn't happen per se, it feels like the truth.
Well, there's a wonderful, it's the final story, and of course, this is the subject of the story.
Yes.
Two lovers are having an argument about whether what one is writing is true or
made up.
Made up, but feels true.
Mm-hmm.
And their recognition of how they see each other is going to change everything. And that, I think, is the truth of your fiction.
Interesting. I never write with the idea of changing anybody.
But?
But it seems to happen.
I've been talking to Roberta Allen. She's written a really wonderful book. These, I think, are their own very short stories. The longer ones have grown from the short ones.
Yes.
And it's a very great pleasure to read them. You can, pardon my expression, breeze through them. That's part of their fun, but then they'll stop you. It's like being arrested by a traffic cop. Suddenly you stop and you say, uh-oh, my foot's still on the brake. So you want to read The Princess of Herself by Roberta Allen, published by the Independent Press,
right.
Telekinesis. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, what a pleasure.
You can comment on today's show at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. Special thanks to my co-producer, Michelle Escobar. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Thanks to my assistant, Sean Sullivan. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
A bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.